This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're focusing on services for victims of rape, sexual assault, and cyberbullying. According to recent statistics, every 2.5 minutes somewhere in America, someone is sexually assaulted. Victims of sexual assault are 3 times more likely to suffer from depression, 6 times more likely to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, 13 times more likely to abuse alcohol, 26 times more likely to abuse drugs, and 4 times more likely to contemplate suicide. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to focus on services for the victim. There are other issues, probably for another program we'll do in the future, that relate to fair trial, that relate to you're innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So please, everyone, realize that we are focusing on services for the victim. My guests are Jessica Hollander, a sexual assault counselor with Rape Trauma Services of San Mateo County. It's a nonprofit in Millbrae, San Mateo County. 24-hour hotline, you might want to jot this down, is 650-692-7273. My other guests are San Mateo County Deputy District Attorney, with whom I work, Shinmi Chang, and Jeffrey Hayden, certified specialist in criminal law, who has been one of the great supporters of this program, both on air and for Call a Lawyer. So let's do this. I want to let you know that this program is funded by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which has 11 specialties. It's also funded by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. I wonder, Jessica, if you would do this. I think the most important thing, as you have discussed before we went on the air, is making sure that the victim knows what services he or she will get. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening and to share this information. We know that in many, many cases of sexual trauma, the person who was hurt, the survivor, knew and trusted the person who hurt them. And while in many other cases in our lives, when we are seeking out support, we oftentimes turn to friends and family, in certain situations with sexual trauma, when that person is connected to our friends and family, it may be that we need support outside of that inner circle. We may need somebody that we can talk to. And unfortunately, this is one of the most underreported crimes in the United States. And many people in our state, in our county, and in our country have experienced this type of trauma and are suffering in silence. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to make sure that listeners are aware that there are services out there and that there is support available 24/7. At Rape Trauma Services, as you mentioned, we have a 24-hour, 7 days a week hotline that is available to people at any time that they need support. And I think it's important to also point out that that service and all of our services are not just available to the victim themselves, but also to friends and family. When we look at the impact that sexual assault has, it doesn't just affect the person who was directly hurt, the person who was directly impacted, but it hurts everybody who cares about them. And it oftentimes leaves people feeling the sense of powerlessness, wanting to do something, and really needing some support. And so just to know that the number you gave before, the 650-692-7273 hotline number, is available to anybody who needs support around this issue.
Let me ask you this, Jessica, then, in that we send this program out to a number of stations throughout California. And for those of you who've tuned in perhaps just a few minutes late, this is Your Legal Rights on KALW in San Francisco. We are live also on the internet at www.klw.org. And for those of you who may not know it, the first half hour is the statewide version of the program, which we record by CD and send it out to a number of other stations in California, which play the program delayed 1 week. So for persons who may be listening to this in other areas of California next week, and they hear you talk about the 24-hour hotline for rape trauma services, if they're in another part of the state and they are suffering such as I feel I'm to blame, it's my fault, I shouldn't have done this, et cetera, or they're very reluctant to report this to the police, can they call your hotline and perhaps get a referral to the appropriate victim services office in their county?
anybody can call our hotline, and we're there for anybody who's looking for support. But as we know, sometimes it can be really useful to be able to talk to your local resource. And we are very lucky in California to have rape crisis centers all over the state. So a really important resource to know about is our state coalition of rape crisis centers here in California, which is CalCASA. And if someone is listening to this program and is interested in finding out what services are available to them in the county in which they live, they can go to their website, which is CalCASA.org.
That's CalCASA.org.
Exactly. And they have a directory by county where you can look up the local rape crisis center in your area.
All right. So again, that's CalCASA, CalCASA.org, California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, CalCASA.org. One of, you know, I was called a few weeks ago, and the three of you know this, by one of the listeners of the program, and she explained to me that she had been the victim of a rape. Apparently, she had been drugged and raped by a man and was very concerned about going to the police. She took some time to do it. It took her about 6 weeks before she reported it to the police, and she has been suffering ever since. And so she asked me if I would do a program on services for the rape victim, the sexual assault victim. And one of the things, she was very unhappy with the result in her case, different county, this is not San Francisco, but a different county in the Bay Area, where her, even though she filed a complaint with the police department, the DA's office decided not to pursue it. We don't know all of the facts and can't give an opinion on why this was not pursued by the DA's office. But what can you say, Jessica, to someone who is a victim? And we've got victims who may have been intoxicated, taken advantage of. We have, for example, this 15-year-old at a local high school in the Bay Area who on a holiday was and shouldn't have been doing it, but she was drinking with other teenagers. She apparently passed out. She was sexually assaulted by several young men. She was, and they also took pictures of her and put it on the internet. It was so traumatic to her that she committed suicide shortly thereafter. What can you say to someone like the adult woman who asked me to do this program? What should a woman who believes that I have been victimized, but I feel I'm partially at fault here, what do you recommend to them?
Well, I first want to thank the caller who inspired you to do this show, and it's very timely, given that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, for us to be having this conversation. And I think it's important to know that self-blame is one of the most common responses that victims and survivors have after experiencing a sexual assault. When we think about what it means to be sexually assaulted, whether it's drug-related or not, it is an experience of profound and meaningful loss of control, and it's terrifying. And many times after, we focus on how can I make sure this never happens to me again. And so sometimes immediately after an assault, someone will find ways to blame circumstances or themselves in an effort to feel that if I don't do this, if I dress differently, if I look differently, if I don't hang out at that particular restaurant or around these types of people, then it will never happen to me again. And it's a very understandable response to have. Unfortunately, those aren't the reasons why sexual assault happens. And like you said, in her case, that self-blame prevented her from being able to seek the help that she needed right after her assault happened, although she was incredibly courageous and brave to still report it 6 weeks mm-hmm. later. Mm-hmm. And I think what I would want her to know is that it took a lot of courage to tell, and that she absolutely deserves support to heal from this experience. Everybody deserves support. And I think especially in the situation you named with teens, when there's alcohol or drugs involved, that self-blame is incredibly high, and unfortunately keeps many young people feeling that they were at fault for their own victimization. And in the case of Audrey Pott at Saratoga High School, I think unfortunately that sentiment was perpetuated by her peers.
All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of very fine lawyers here for you. I'll let you know who they are later. The number is 1-800-525-9917. They're waiting to talk to you. 1-800-525-9917. We do this every month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. We have the legal areas of workers' compensation law, criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, consumer litigation or consumer issues, tax law, real estate, and patent, aviation, and lemon law. And by the way, tomorrow, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk with you, and I'll give you his phone number in a little while. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are San Mateo County Deputy District Attorney Xinmi Chang, Jeff Hayden, Certified Specialist in Criminal Law, Defense Attorney, and Jessica Hollander, a Sexual Assault Counselor with Rape Promise Services of San Mateo County, which is a nonprofit organization. And by the way, for those of you who are listening to this program live, we will be taking some calls in the second half hour of the program, so bear with us, whether you're listening to us live in the Bay Area on KALW, or if you're listening to us on the internet at www.kalw.org. We will be taking your calls in just a few minutes. What about prevention? What can be done? Let me do this. Let me come to you, Xinmi. You're a prosecutor on this. What comments do you have with respect to the services that are available, and what maybe you have seen in terms of the victims who you have dealt with? Have you experienced that many of them have delayed in trying to get help for a while because of self fault, or what comments do you have?
Yes, I think as a sexual assault prosecutor, what I commonly encounter is the myth that victims will immediately come forward and disclose. And studies have shown that for both children and adults, this is absolutely false. In fact, I would say most victims of sexual assault do not immediately disclose at all. And so where I come into this process is after the initial disclosure has been made, the forensic interview takes place at our Keller Center. Rape Trauma Services is often the first one on scene. They're there to greet the victim and the family. And we observe the interview. We consult on whether or not a medical exam is necessary because we provide all those services on site. Then the victims have an opportunity to privately discuss with the RTS counselor what kind of services they need.
That's RTS, Rape Trauma Services?
Correct.
Yes.
And if the case ends up in court and if there is any kind of a hearing, we have our own advocates in the district attorney's office who are specialists in court support. So they do everything from updating the victims on the status of the cases to literally taking them to and from the courtroom where the hearing is taking place. So we have a variety of ways of helping meet the needs of the victims.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, what comments do you have at this point?
Generally, I would come into the case much later in the game. After the case has been filed and the person's been arraigned, I would normally get contacted to make certain that the person accused gets a fair trial, that they're not accused of or convicted of something far worse than what they did, if they did anything at all. And I wouldn't be here in this line of work if I didn't have a strong belief in the presumption of innocence. But that being said, on a more global scale, I and defense attorneys like me are part of the community. We want to see services to crime victims. We want to go as far as possible in protecting victims, as long as it doesn't interfere with the rights of my client to have a fair trial. Short of that, we're in complete support. What we're talking about here is getting aid, getting comfort to people who are either victims of crime or at least appear to have been victims of crime. And I think it's only appropriate within the community that these services are provided.
What comments do you have to make about this awful situation involving this teenager who committed suicide? And apparently, aside from the incredible trauma of being sexually assaulted, She apparently was intoxicated, from what we understand. She passed out, as best I can understand from the reports that I'm aware of. She was sexually assaulted by more than one teenage boy. However, they took photos of her, and they put them on the internet. And then this became a big deal where she thought everybody in the world knew what had happened to her, showed her body, etc., and it just psychologically broke her down, and she committed suicide. She hung herself. So what comments do you have about this? I mean, this is part of cyberbullying, which is that's a program all of its own, but here we have sexual assault, cyberbullying, where they put this on the internet, which led this young woman to committing suicide. What comments do you have about that? And what can be done, if anything, to try to prevent something like this in the future?
These stories are so important to talk about, and I say stories, plural, because this is very similar to the tragedy that took place in Steubenville, Ohio, and Nova Scotia. Situations and many others that aren't making national, international news, where young people are assaulted by peers, and often peers that they consider to be friends of theirs, and then having that assault be shared through social media, through text messages, through pictures and videos. And we've had situations just like this in San Mateo County. And as we were talking about earlier, that is another layer of loss of control. Something happened to someone that they had no control over. They are intoxicated and unconscious. And then they learn about it because it's being shared with so many of their peers. And oftentimes then judged, criticized, stigmatized, rather than people reaching out to them for support.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we see with this case of Audrey Pott, only 15 years old, how fatal those consequences can be. They're such important stories to talk about because if anything can come of them, it's that we use them as an opportunity to engage each other, our colleagues, our children, in a conversation about prevention and how to ensure that tragedies like these never occur again. As somebody that works in the schools and works with middle school students and high school students, I use these stories to really engage young people in a conversation about what they can do if they see something like this beginning to happen. And really what they would do, not just what they think the right answer is, but getting really creative and thinking about how could I intervene? I think one of the most tragic parts of these stories is that it was clear that so many people knew and oftentimes were witnessing the act,
mm-hmm.
and none of them were intervening.
Did anything.
Except take pictures and
yeah.
perpetuate the violence more.
Yeah.
And so we need change. We need to shift the norm from being one that minimizes or even worse, condones mm-hmm. rape and sexual violence, to one that won't stand for it. And we have to engage our young people in a real dialogue about what they can do, whether they're at that party and they see this happening, or what they can do if they see a picture on Facebook being passed around at school, what the appropriate action is to take a stand.
Is this something that you feel the schools should begin to include in their curriculum in terms of teaching and getting young people? I mean, it's the electronics world that we're in. People can't walk down the street without looking at their cell phone or whatever it may be, or talking on the cell phone. Jeff?
One thing I would add, I deal with a lot of juveniles that are accused of crimes, that are accusing others of crimes. And one of the things that I find disconcerting, this is a horrific case.
Yes.
We don't know the extent of it. We don't know entirely what happened. Hopefully this will be fleshed out. But there are so many lesser cases where it starts out with somebody sharing a picture of themselves or people taking a picture of one another. And those pictures are shared. The person is violated. Because that picture is posted, you have had a trusted relationship that's been abused. And one thing that I think can't be said often enough is to encourage people not to be in that situation, not to shift blame and say, you know, you put your picture out there for Freddie to send out to the world, but rather, how well do you know Freddie that you're going to want to send that picture and mm-hmm. be in that position? Mm-hmm. That's not to blame the poor person whose picture is being sent around, but rather to say, you really want to be careful before you put that picture out there.
Well, and I think that's where the shifting of norms needs to happen, because many of the young people I work with, as young as 6th and 7th grade, it's the norm. You're expected, your peers encourage that if you're in a relationship, you're supposed to share pictures, you're supposed to share passwords to social media. And this generation is grappling with this issue in a new and different way than any other generation has had to before. And so I think it's the responsibility of us older people to educate ourselves to be able to know enough about how to engage in that conversation.
All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night. I see our attorneys who are here who want to talk to you. They're just talking to themselves. They want to talk to you. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Please take advantage of the fact that they are here. No obligation on your part whatsoever. They're great believers in trying to, provide legal information to you if you need it. So it's 1-800-525-9917. And don't be bashful. Take the phone, 1-800-525-9917, and they'll be very happy to talk to you. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our program is focusing on services for victims of rape, sexual assault, and cyberbullying. My guests are Jessica Hollander, a sexual assault counselor with Rape Trauma Services of San Mateo County, which is a nonprofit organization. The 24-hour hotline, which actually can be used anywhere from anywhere in the state to get you wherever you may be to the right location, is 650-692-7273, 650-692-7273. And also there is an organization which is the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, where you can, if you go to the internet, CalCASA, CalCASA.org, if you dial that in, you will be able to, through CalCASA, find out where the sexual assault office is, sexual or rape trauma services is in your community. My other guests are San Mateo County Deputy District Attorney Shinmi Chang. She is a rape prosecutor, a sexual assault prosecutor. My other guest is Jeff Hayden, defense attorney, certified specialist in criminal law. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that I think you want to try to include in this half hour. What have we not even touched upon that you feel? I mean, one of the things that I have learned from talking with you is that sexual assault and rape are one or two of the most underreported crimes in the United States. And how do we actually help people to realize that they can get help and that they should try to take advantage of organizations that are there to try to get them back into perhaps feeling a little bit better than what they're feeling right now?
I think shows like these are a first step. I think, mm-hmm. unfortunately, this is a topic that's difficult to talk about, difficult to engage in conversation, partially because it has touched so many of us personally. You know, when we're looking at statistics of 1 in 3 women and 1 in 6 men experiencing sexual abuse in their lifetime, all of us know somebody who's been touched by this issue, whether we know that or not. And I think oftentimes that sense of isolation, that nobody will understand what I've been through, keeps a lot of people feeling isolated and unable to reach out for support. And we all deserve to support to heal from this experience, and nobody should have to suffer alone. And so I think really being able to talk and engage in these conversations and continue them beyond this radio show, you know, for our listeners to take a piece of something that you hear tonight and to share that with your friends and community helps us to begin to let everybody know and helps us to shift the culture, again, from one that minimizes or normalizes sexual violence as being part of our culture to one that works together to prevent it from continuing to happen.
Let me throw this question to you, if you don't mind, to the three of you. In the situation of the listener who asked me to do this program, she informed me in an email today. She got back to me. I first talked to her 3 weeks ago or so. She got back to me to tell me that the district attorney in the county in which the crime occurred, for whatever reason, decided not to prosecute. Her understanding is that the district attorney's office felt that she had taken too long to report this, etc. What can be done to help heal someone like this who feels not only was she victimized, was she raped? In her email to me, she said she was drugged by this man and then raped. But the legal system didn't help her. So she's not only physically and psychologically damaged, but she is someone who feels that I can't even get help from the legal system. What comments do you have? Please, Xinmi Cheng.
Well, it's vitally important to get across that even though a criminal case may never be filed for various reasons, victims are still eligible for services. So in many, if not most, counties in California, there will be a safe center that victims will be taken to. And as I said earlier in the show, the medical, therapeutic, psychological needs of the victims are all met there. And that's independent of whether or not a case is ultimately filed.
Mm-hmm. So would you suggest then throughout California that someone who is a victim who has not been the subject of a prosecution to get in touch with a local district attorney's office for help?
I would start with the local law enforcement agency.
Local law enforcement agency. Okay.
Yes.
All right. You know, we are coming now to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue for another half hour live in the Bay Area, live on the internet at www.kalw.org. And so if you do have a question or a comment, we'll be taking that from you in just a minute. Okay, it is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. This is Chuck Finney, and we're doing services for victims of rape, sexual assault, and cyberbullying. All right, you know, this is interesting, and we'll talk about this. A note has just been brought to me, and the caller says, please use the word survivor rather than victim. And we'll talk about that in a minute, if you don't mind, because obviously I don't want to have someone feel even worse by using the wrong words. So thank you very much, whoever you are, for bringing that to our attention. There are a couple of things that I want to tell you. It is our Call a Lawyer Night, which we do once a month. It's 1-800-525-9917. I want to let you know who's here and their areas of law. For workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan, a certified specialist, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. For criminal law, Mara Feiger, a certified specialist in criminal law. For family law, Janet Frankel, also a certified specialist in family law. Legal malpractice law, Peter Fortune, the chair of the Legal Malpractice Commission. Landlord-tenant law, both Sal Timpano and Nathaniel Bigger. I think this is Nathaniel Bigger's first time joining us for landlord-tenant. For employment and labor law, Greg Spallis. This is Greg's first time here. For consumer litigation or consumer issues, we do have an attorney here. And because of her law firm involvement, she feels at least this first time that she's here, she wants to remain anonymous. So I won't give you her name, but she is a consumer litigation, consumer issues litigator. In case you have a consumer question. For tax law and real estate, Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation, lemon law, Ron Rohde. And tomorrow, Leon Bayer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk to you. No obligation whatsoever. That's Thursday, April 25th from 8 to 11 a.m. If you call 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you get his voicemail, please leave your name and phone number. He will call you back. He's incredibly generous with his time and has been doing this in conjunction with this radio program for a number of years. So please take advantage of him. Let's go now, before we take our first call. Let's talk about this comment that the caller said, please use the word survivor.
Yeah, I think it's an important part of this conversation, and I appreciate the caller who called in asking us to be mindful of our language. I know that, you know, we all come from different backgrounds in terms of how we approach this issue in our professional roles. And I know that typically, in my experience, people working within the justice system and law enforcement tend to use the word victim more commonly than using the term survivor. As someone who works in the rape crisis movement, who works in the supportive end of things and has been doing this work for many years, the term that many of us use, and I think the term that many prefer to use, is the term survivor. Mm-hmm. The idea being that, well, there's many ideas about why, but for me, the idea being that somebody else made the decision to victimize this person, but this person who experienced that victimization is the one who's surviving it. And so really to come from this place of empowerment and respect for their experience.
Jeff, please.
In addition to not wanting to validate the attacker by using the word survivor, by using the word victim, within the justice system, I personally dislike the word victim until it's been proven. Once we're in a court setting, once I have someone I'm defending, I tend to say complaining witness rather than the actual victim for very different reasons. But I think that we could all probably agree that it's probably the wrong word to use. It validates the wrong person.
Well, thank you very much, whoever you are who brought this to my attention. And hopefully we will try to continue to use the word survivor. I'd like to have you know also that this is National Crime Victims' Rights Week, and my office, the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, the Victim Services Unit, is inviting you to attend a community outreach event and resource fair to commemorate this National Crime Victims' Rights Week. There will be speakers to discuss new challenges and new solutions in San Mateo County, and particularly facing human trafficking victims. And that's tomorrow, April 25th, from 9 to 11 a.m. You're invited. They'll even have a continental breakfast. And it's at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, 1300 South El Camino Real in San Mateo. Again, Silicon Valley Community Foundation, 1300 South El Camino Real in San Mateo. And that's, again, sponsored by my office, the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office Victim Services Unit. And everyone is invited who would like to come to learn about community resources available to victims in San Mateo County.
And Chuck, if I may just jump in.
Yeah, please, Jessica.
Just to also let people know, because we mentioned before it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, Rape Trauma Services is having their fifth annual Sexual Assault Awareness Month walk this Saturday, April 27th, beginning at 11 a.m. at Central Park in San Mateo. So for any of our listeners who are interested, please give us a call at 650-652-0598. That's our office line. We can give you more information on how to get registered, and it's a $20 registration fee.
And also, I want to give again the 24-hour hotline for the Rape Trauma Services of San Mateo County, 650-692-7273, 650-692-7273. And Karen, welcome to the program. Thanks for being patient.
Yes, good evening.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is very interesting because I see kids or people walking down the street all the time, young women, men, and they stand there and they're taking a picture of themselves. And then they're going to tweet it, or they're going to Facebook it, or they're going to send it, or they're going to email or whatever. So there they are standing with the camera up either facing them or on top of them. They're not looking behind themselves. They don't know who's behind them. They're basically setting themselves up as a kind of a prey species, because when they walk down the street and they get to the corner, they don't look both ways when they cross. They don't have eye contact with the drivers. They're texting on their phone, or they're tweeting, or they're photographing themselves. They are lost in another zone. And the zone is this technological, mesmerizing, the little smartphones or the whatever.
Well, let me get some.
I have to tell you that about 2 weeks ago on the front page of the New York Times, it said that 83% increase in people being attacked on the street while they're on the phone and have being pushed down, their phone being grabbed, and their purse or their briefcase being grabbed, because they're not paying attention.
Well, let me get some comments. Karen, thank you very much.
Yes.
One of the things that bothers me, frankly, and I do have, believe it or not, I do have an iPhone. But one of the things that bothers me is that people can't walk down the street like they were human beings without having to have look at their iPhone or their cell phone or whatever. It really bothers me. This is where we are in this electronic age. Does anyone have any comments for Karen with what she was just telling me? Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Two things. First is, I think, Karen, you're completely correct in that people need to be aware of their surroundings, and sometimes taking themselves out of the zone of looking around and kind of seeing where you are puts you in tremendous danger. The other touches on a related point to something we were talking about before the show began, which is young people today oftentimes like to document themselves, document what they're doing, and they really didn't grow up in an era with an expectation of privacy that the rest of us did. And we sometimes forget that, and forget that younger people have a sense of wanting to put pictures of themselves in places where maybe we wouldn't, because they're not thinking about what other people may do with it. They're thinking of propagating their experience and sharing it with other people in a way that may make them vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important, I think, for
me,
parents. We talked earlier, you posed the question of whether or not cyber safety should be taught in schools.
Yeah.
But it also starts at home. You have to teach children. You have to have that conversation. Just as you would not talk to strangers,
yes,
you shouldn't talk to strangers on the net, and be very careful, because I think, as Jeff said earlier, children these days are not aware of the permanence of the mm-hmm. images, that once it leaves your camera, you have
it's there.
Control.
It's there.
And I think, too, you know, when you asked the question before, which I so appreciate, should this be taught in schools? Absolutely, and we shouldn't be waiting for tragedies to occur before we have these conversations.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of parents and teachers feel like they have to play catch-up to figure out what the newest, you know, Instagram, Facebook, social media, you know, sites are that young people are using, and what technology they're using, and they're savvy with passwords and protecting their parents from being able to see things. We have to educate ourselves, mm-hmm. and we have to be able to have this conversation at a really young age about safety, about, you know, everything that we're discussing in terms of the possibility of these things being shared, of that consent being taken away in any of these cases, but really also making sure that children know that if they ever are harmed, that they are loved and supported, and that they can talk about it, and that they're not going to be blamed for, quote unquote, putting themselves at risk.
Yeah. All right. Call a lawyer. I see our lawyers talking to each other again. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Please give them a call. They're here to try to be of some help to you if you have a problem. Marie Louise, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
And I thank you very much. And I didn't exactly first call to say this, but what I'm thinking of, I did some programs in schools mm-hmm. with children, and I tried to kind of say that it would be a good idea for all of us to find who might be a safe person in our life when we need someone to talk to turn to have a designated safe person. And I think that might be a good idea to be taught in schools, you know, that people are aware of this, because there are children that are told, well, go to your pastor, go to here, go to there. Those are not necessarily safe people. But if children can think of that earlier, yes, I can talk to my grandma, I can talk to my uncle, or I can talk to, you know, somebody. I'm just thinking of that now, but what I really wanted to say was that I have a person in my life who was raped as a young girl. She was raped when she was 6, and when this happened, she was threatened that if she said anything to anyone, this older boy would kill her family.
Oh, my.
Now she's 6, right?
Wow.
And so it goes on from there, but I'm not gonna say very much more. But I would also like to say this: mm-hmm. I once saw a most disturbing film about men who had abused children,
mm-hmm.
and there was one man who had abused his own daughter, and she was about 8, I think, or so at the time, and it went on for some time. And then it came out that he had been sexually abused by three brothers.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I that doesn't excuse him for abusing his daughter. But, I mean, it's so complex.
Yes.
And so I just wanted to mention that it's not always girls. It happens in both sexes.
Yeah.
And Marie, thank you for making that point, because I think one of the things we want to make sure people are aware of is that this is a cycle.
Yeah.
And that oftentimes people who are hurting others were hurt themselves, and that's not an excuse, it's an explanation.
Yeah.
And that it can be prevented. The cycle doesn't have to continue if people who are hurt get the support that they deserve.
Exactly.
They are less likely to reenact that experience and act it out onto somebody else.
Marie-Louise, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Very glad that you did. Call a lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. A couple of things I want to tell you about at this point. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KAOW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. It's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own and tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced and set up a half an hour consultation with the attorney. If you can't get into the attorney's office because of perhaps a disability, I think they'll do their best to try to give you an opportunity to have a telephone conference with the attorney for half an hour. Depending on the county, it could be a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. For anyone who wants a certified specialist in any one of the 11 fields of the Board of Legal Specialization, you can either call 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the website www.californiaspecialist.org, californiaspecialist.org, and you can find out in your own community who the certified specialists are. There is a very long, but this is a very important point that is being made that's been brought into the studio here. That let me read this. Bear with me. We'll get to the other, those of you who have called and been patient. And here's what it says. What about the perpetrators? ? Typically, these boys get suspended or expelled, which perpetrates the problem of escalating dropout rates and contributing to the school-to-prison pipeline. Many Bay Area schools are adopting restorative justice policies involving bringing the survivor and offender in a conference to talk to each other and reach agreement on the offender taking responsibility and agreeing to make restitution and repair the harm. This is an alternative to criminal charges and expulsion. What do your guests think of this approach? Do you think it's appropriate where sexual assault is involved? Yes, Jeff.
I absolutely support the program, but in most of the situations that we've been discussing here, it's probably a bit more serious than those programs were designed for. Restorative justice is a great way to get people back on track, especially young people trying to ameliorate the disputes between them before acts of delinquency, before expulsion and the like. But for something of this nature, I don't see it being diverted from the justice system just because of the seriousness and the serious victimization. In the restorative processes that are in place in many of the extrajudicial systems, whether they be community-based or school-based, the participation is up to the victim or survivor of whatever it was. Nobody is going to force them to participate. And in something such as this, it would probably be very traumatic for somebody who has suffered through this event to have to participate.
Chimney, do you have some comments on that?
Sure.
Also?
I'm not aware of any situations like that. I think maybe that's because I deal exclusively with adult offenders, so I don't know what goes on in juvenile court. However, I can say that sexual assault laws are getting harsher and harsher as we speak. So I can't imagine, like Jeff said, that this kind of restorative justice being applied to sexual assault cases. No,
unfortunately, it's much too severe. Let me remind you again, for those of you who, if you may be a survivor or perhaps a service provider, you're welcome and encouraged to attend tomorrow, that's Thursday, April 25th, from 9 to 11. The San Mateo County District Attorney's Office Victim Services Unit is sponsoring a program at Silicon Valley Community Foundation, 1300 South El Camino Real in San Mateo, and you're invited. They apparently will have a continental breakfast, and I think you'll find that it'll be a very valuable opportunity, whether you're a survivor or a service provider. All right, let's talk with Roberta. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Roberta, are you still there? I guess we lost her. Sorry, Roberta, that we lost you. Let me see. We've got, all right, we have on line number 4, Anonymous. Go ahead. Is Anonymous there?
I'm here.
All right, go ahead. You're on the air.
So I'm the person who got the ball rolling with this show. I spoke with you, Mr. Finney.
Okay, all right, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, I just want to assert that a sexual assault is a violent crime. And second of all, in my case, when I got drugged, I had only 2 sips of a drink. I don't really drink alcohol at all. So he slipped something into a drink that he insisted that I have. And lastly, I had no shame. What I wanted to clarify, what happened was that I was actually terrified that he would come and kill me if I reported him to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really a matter of shame, and I believe that I'm not the only one who doesn't go to the police because they're terrified of retribution and death, possibly. Because my nervous system was on such high edge in a state of post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And it sounds like you were really in survival mode and trying to do whatever you felt at that moment would keep you the most safe. And I think the caller who called before, Mary Louise, spoke of a friend who'd gone through a situation in which her life was threatened as a child. And so I think that is a real fear that can't be minimized. And I really appreciate you sharing your story and for getting the ball rolling with this conversation. I think it will benefit so many people. And I think it is important, the point that you made, that oftentimes we think of somebody, drug-facilitated rape being somebody who drank to excess, which does happen, but that these drugs can be slipped into anything, water, juice, milk, and that it doesn't take a large consumption of that drink to have its effect.
All right, let's do this. Thank you very much, Anonymous, for calling, and thank you very much for calling me a few weeks ago and asking me to put this program on. I think it's very valuable. I hope you are getting help and that you will recover and have a normal life again. Thanks so much for calling also.
Thank you, and I am getting the help, and I'm a force to be reckoned with. This is
good. I'm glad to hear that. That's probably very healthy, very healthy. Take care now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Jeff, go ahead.
I just wanted to add, in your case, there wasn't a prosecution, but for people situated like yourself, even when there's not a prosecution, there are services available to you. There are services for survivors and victims. And every time somebody is convicted in any criminal case in California, no matter how minor the case, they pay into a fund to provide for services for victims and survivors of crime. There are services out there. There are people that can help.
Yeah, very good. And Anonymous, I don't know. I think you're over in across the bay. I don't know whether you are interested and you feel it would be of any value to you. But again, I think you probably heard me mention that my office, the Victim Services Unit, is having this presentation tomorrow in San Mateo from 9 to 11. So you're invited to go to that if you wish. It's at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, 1300 South El Camino Real in San Mateo from 9 to 11. All right, Barbara, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Well, good. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. A friend of mine is having a nervous breakdown, because she was molested by two different clergy at her church. She says she has tried to get a lawyer to help her report this to authorities, but she is told that different rules apply when the perpetrator is a religious professional.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's absolutely wrong.
Absolutely no. False.
No.
And she does not need a lawyer. She is free to get one if she chooses to,
no.
But you do not need a lawyer to
no.
go make a police report. And
no.
that's the first
no.
thing she should do. Contact the agency where the crime occurred, and the police will take it from there.
What county was this in?
San Francisco.
Yeah, no, you and she has not reported this to the police yet?
She has not, and it happened several years ago. The other clergy told her to forget about it and that she was supposed to forgive the other two clergy.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Terrible. How many years ago?
About 8 to 10 years ago.
Yeah. There's a potential statute of limitations problem, is there not, on this?
Depends on how old she was.
Yeah, how old was she at the time, Eileen?
An adult.
She was an adult. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jeff, do you have a comment on this?
I was only going to say, I think for people that find themselves in the same position today, the atmosphere has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, too, for your friend, just to know, again, I know we keep reiterating this, that whatever she decides to do with the legal process, I heard you describe that she's having a nervous breakdown. She absolutely deserves support to heal from this experience. And if she feels that she's not getting it from people that she's turned to, that can oftentimes be just as painful, if not more painful, than the trauma she experienced originally. And it's so, so vital that she gets some support.
Has she received or is she receiving any kind of professional help?
In regard, what do you mean?
Well, obviously this has been not only physical, but a psychological significant problem for her. I'm wondering
I think what has happened is that she has been dealing with this repressed memory that came up, perhaps in talking about it with someone.
Well, what I'm wondering is she getting professional help from a psychiatrist or a psychologist or someone who deals with survivors?
Yes, I think she is, but not from someone who actually has that as a specialty.
Well, maybe that she's not seeing the right person.
Well, and Barbara, I mean, you're a wonderful friend to call in, and I want to stress that, too, and the fact that she is confiding in you shows a lot of strength on her part and resiliency. And in San Francisco, there is SF War, which is San Francisco Women Against Rape, which is the local rape crisis center there. If she or if you are interested, sometimes getting that support as a friend can allow you to get the support that you deserve to better be able to support her.
Right, but I mean, the fact that she's dealing with this thing that all of a sudden came out. You're talking about a statute of limitations, but what about this idea of this repressed memory?
Well, that's something that has to be, I think, medically dealt with by the appropriate person. And certainly, I think not all psychiatrists know how to deal with that. You've got to find the right person. I'm wondering, is this person someone who you would be willing to take a drive to somewhere for, like, tomorrow morning?
I don't think I could.
You could do that.
Do
too
that.
Bad. No. Too bad. You know, let me suggest this to you, Barbara. You know, we've given out the hotline. Maybe you might want to call the hotline for the Rape Trauma Services of San Mateo County. It may help you to better deal with your friend. Did you get that number?
That's 650-692-2773.
No, 7273.
Oh, I'm sorry.
692-7273. You know, it may help you as a friend of this woman who has been suffering so much.
I'm sorry to say, I belong to the same church, so it's a very...
Oh, no, and are these clergy still there?
Oh, some of them are, yes.
Oh, wow, that's really incredible.
And if there's concern that there might be harm or the risk of harm to other children, if these clergy still have access to children...
Well, but Mm-hmm. Well, it's possible. I don't know. But again, she is an adult.
No. Yeah, but Jessica's point is, if these clergy did this to this woman who was an adult, you know, they might do this to children. That is Jessica's point.
Or to adults. I mean,
either way, other adults.
If you are concerned that they are potentially hurting other people, I mean, I'm not the expert here, so I'll turn over to Shinmi, but I would imagine that she too can make a report to her local law enforcement agency if there is concern of risk to others.
Yes, but
so
I think...
So that even though this is a situation where I understand you're saying she needs psychological help or psychiatric help, the benefit of reporting this might be to prevent these people from doing it to someone else.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course. Well, I also suggest, as I did just a moment ago, Barbara, you give that 24-hour hotline a call. Maybe it'll be helpful to you in better assisting your friend. So thank you very much for calling.
I appreciate it.
And good luck with your friend. And I'm we've heard some very sad stories tonight. So thanks for calling. All right. Let me see. I think we have time for one more call. However, I want you to call the attorneys, 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. And Annie, we have about half a minute. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to offer some resources.
Yeah.
So there's a new book that's come out by Naomi Wolf. It's called Vagina, A New Biography. And basically, there's a neural network that connects to the female sex organ. And so when you're raped, that's violated. And it's very physical. So it's really important to get it out of your body. And so a self-defense class is also very helpful for that. There are self-defense classes in the Bay Area. There's BAM, Bay Area Model Mugging, might be called something else now. And there is also a theory that describes why there's this frozen feeling instead of a fighting or a flight. And so as a survivor, it's very important to eject it from the body. So there are many resources out there, but it's really important to reach out, get help, make sure it is physical, somatic type of therapy, not only talking about it, but really working with it physically.
Yeah, Annie, thank you for saying that. Our agency actually really focuses on going beyond talk therapy and providing somatic ways of healing. And I absolutely agree with you. I think we know that we hold this trauma not just in our minds, but in our bodies, and that there are a lot of wonderful resources in the Bay Area to get that type of healing.
We have come to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us, Jessica Hollander. Thank you very much. Rape Trauma Services of San Mateo County, a nonprofit. The hotline is 650-692-7273. I want to thank Shinmi, who I work with, at least in the same office. I don't handle what she does, but San Mateo County Deputy DA Shinmi Chang, and Jeff Hayden, my good friend and great supporter of, I'm very generous with your time on this radio program, both on the air and for Call a Lawyer. Jeff Hayden, certified specialist in criminal law, defense attorney. Thank you very much. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you are the captain of your boat, or you like cruises, or you have questions about law of the seas and navigable waters, we're going to be talking about maritime law next week. My guests will be certified specialists in admiralty and maritime law, Otis Felder and Carol Finkelhoff. So join us next week for that. Thank you very much for listening and joining us for Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We'll be right back.